of home were burning brightly when I left so long ago.
You're listening to Can't Do Nothing With Love, an award-winning short story collection written and read by Ellen Morris Pruitt. Today's episode features Show the Clothes. I've just told the woman that the suit is Armani, and she's glaring at me, hostile. I take a step away from her table, put my chin on a shelf, which is a runway move, but I use it anyway because it intimidates these salad eaters. The woman is not intimidated. She's breathing like a boar hog, her mouth half open, the gap in her teeth wide as a Mississippi River. I am a professional. I continue my spiel. The fabric is a flax and silk blend. I call it flax because the tag said flax, which I'm pretty sure means linen, but I'm not positive. From Ginger's Dress Shop, I raise my voice, at Glenglade Shopping Center. The dress may be from Ginger's, but Glenglade is the one paying me to show the clothes. So I call out the name of the shopping center loud and clear. I must have belted Glenglade 200 times since I started this gig first of the week. No need to shout, missy, the woman snips in a British accent. Her perfume is so strong, a puff powder smell. I'm afraid it's infecting the clothes, which Ginger's will hold me responsible for, which I don't intend to have happen. I take another step back, and I smile. Memphis likes for its models to smile. The suit sells for $1,500. The little cotton top, I unbutton the jacket and plant my hand on my hip to show the striped tee, is $180. Now the woman is livid. She's mad as hell. At me. She says, I could afford that, putting a question mark at the end of her statement like she's a valley girl or something, which she is not. She's got to be 50 years old at least, and there isn't an ounce of style about her. And saying it could, I could afford that, like she's straight off the BBC, acting superior as hell just because the words roll off her tongue different than ours. But I won't pay it. Now her mouth is trembling, as if I put a gun to her head to buy the Armani suit, which I haven't, because I am only the model, and it's only a luncheon at the Memphis Park Museum, featuring table modeling, sponsored by Glenglade Shopping Center. I don't set the prices, ma'am. If you have a problem with the cost, you'll need to talk to Mr. Armani about it. I cut my eyes to see if Olivia heard what I said. Olivia is a tattletale. If she heard me, she'll run tell Josie, the Glenglade rep who runs the fashion show. Table models aren't supposed to mouth off at the customers. We're supposed to show the clothes and let them speak for themselves. Thankfully, Olivia is busy at the next table, going on and on about the cheap dress she's showing. Nothing Armani on her skinny body. All around us, ladies are murmuring, enjoying their chicken salad with walnuts, their vinaigrated lettuce, their banana muffins. George, the musician, is playing his guitar in the corner, providing the ambiance. Josie, who's 8 months pregnant, is hanging by the door to the kitchen. Josie almost gave birth when she saw George in a short-sleeved shirt. George is scruffy-looking on his best days, like a terrier snuffling by the side of the road, but the checked shirt was really something. Josie made him put on a jacket, so now he looks like a terrier snuffling beside the road, wearing a jacket. That's the bloody difference, the British lady is saying, low-class accent and all, between me and... I will never know who she thinks she's different from because I walk away. I don't have to take gruff off some old broad who's wearing a maroon and navy blazer with a gray tweed skirt. In Memphis? In May. Who dressed her this morning anyway? The Queen? I avoid the table Olivia's working because it's not polite to step on another model's spiel. I stop instead at a two-top with a couple, man and woman, which is unusual. Men never come to these luncheons. This guy, I'm standing 6 inches from him, and he's staring straight ahead, refusing to acknowledge my presence, making it clear he doesn't want his wife looking my way either. Of course, she complies, because that's what wives with asshole husbands do. They comply. I sigh, what a mess of a round, and begin walking away. But when I do, the wife twists her neck just a bit. She peeks at my outfit. I twirl on my toes. I return to her table. I show her the clothes, asshole husband or not. She listens, head down, never looking up. I clip another turn and head to the dressing room. It's no skin off my back, but I hate it when people are rude. The Park Museum advertises the table-to-table modeling. If folks don't want to see the clothes, they shouldn't come to the luncheon. If they arrive, surprised to see us models strutting around in fancy outfits, they can at least not treat us like dirt. Back in the dressing room, I'm stripping and redressing for the next round when Josie flutters in. Is everything all right, Becca? Clasping her hands under her chin, she wheels me to give her the correct answer. The sharp tips of her elbows rest on her beach ball belly. Everything is fine, I tell her as I sit to pull off the Armani pants. They love the clothes. Oh, good. She gives me a pale smile, tall and willowy. Josie could model herself, except for the ball of her baby, and she's too fluttery. You have to be studying yourself to show clothes. Otherwise, you just end up showing yourself. Then Josie adds, because Olivia thought she heard something? So, Olivia the snitch, interfering with my relationship with Glenglade, which is just what I don't need. Glenglade is the biggest employer of models in the Mid-South, the only employer in Memphis who shows clothes on a regular basis. Yes, I do trunk shows for some of the high-end women's stores, but I hate trunk shows. 6 hours on your feet in high heels, 15 minutes for lunch, lucky if you can walk the next day. Table modeling is much easier, even when the luncheoners are rude. I tell Josie the truth as I slip into my next outfit. The British lady had an adverse reaction to the prices. I handled it, which is not entirely the truth, but it's what Josie wants to hear. Ginger's is expensive, Josie shrugs, making us compadres again. I turn and lift my hair off my neck so she can fasten my necklace for me. Then she unearths the tag from the back of my Light Horse 188 jacket and tells me how much it costs. She flutters her fingers at me and returns to the floor, everything back to normal. Olivia sails in. Olivia is showing clothes from the coachman. The coachman is, shall we say, not Glenglade's shining jewel. Its clothes are cheap. The jacket Olivia is wiggling out of cost $29.95. All the luncheoners ooh and ah over Olivia when she comes to their table. They love her cheap clothes. You make that suit so much more than it is. I snap a triple-strand pearl bracelet on my wrist. Ginger's has such wonderful things. The bracelet will show nicely when I plant my hand on my hip. I test it out. I'm so glad you approve of my appearance. Olivia bends her neck to unhook the back of her cheap necklace. This is a riveting sight. Olivia has the longest neck I've ever seen. Olivia stands 5'10", and I swear 12 inches of it is her neck. She has bug eyes, too, with green iridescent eyeshadow coating her lids, because she thinks it sets off her hazel eyes. What it sets off is alarm bells. You're not going to be forgetting, Olivia. Before she removes her top, she arranges a paper cone around her neck to keep the makeup off the clothes, which you only need if you wear a lot of makeup, which I don't. I do bring cotton pads to stick under my armpits while I'm changing, because the museum keeps this closet of a changing room hot as hell, and I can't take the clothes back to Ginger's with stained pits. Stains, breakage, rips, lost buttons, any damage to the clothes, and it comes out of my pocket. That Englishwoman was still talking about you when I got to her table, Olivia says, plucking a chunk of cheese from the tray the museum gives us and calls it lunch. She munches the cheese, her long neck working, the paper cone bumping against her jaw. She swallows. Her throat undulates. Maybe this outfit will be more to her liking. I sweep my hair into a makeshift chignon and check on it in the mirror. That works better, with the pink tweed jacket, 3/4 sleeve. You wouldn't think I could do pink tweed with all my red hair, but you'd be wrong. With my creamy skin, tawny cheeks, and red hair, I look like a freshly baked biscuit, a dollop of strawberry jelly on top. The British cow is not impressed. I shouldn't have stopped at her table. I should have wound around to the next table with the mousy woman and the asshole husband. At least they're quiet. But I catch Josie eyeing me, and I don't want to skip a table, then have to explain myself while Olivia whines, but she was perfectly nice to me. And how much is that? The British woman interrupts my spiel. She grimaces like a dog baring its teeth. I plant a smile on my face and continue. The designer is Lighthouse 188. Designer, she snorts and shoots her companions a look. Get ready, girls. Designer means money. What is this woman doing at this luncheon? George plucks the guitar, making it sound like a ukulele. The British woman's fellow luncheoners sit stoic, but I can feel the mousy woman at the next table perking her ear my way, picking up on the discord, her radar for trouble fine-tuned. This red jacket, I say, shot through with silver thread, is $10.55. It takes the woman a moment to compute what I've just said. As in $1,055? She barks. Yes, ma'am. It's got no sleeves. 3/4 sleeves. Couture. I can't believe I'm trying to give this oaf of a woman a fashion lesson. this rude sausage eater, a pint-sloshing, sausage-eating pub hound. That's what she is, who's wandered into a fashion show where she doesn't belong. Your wrists stick out, she huffs. I plant my hand on my hip to show the pearl strand of bracelet. Addressing my remarks to her companions, I finish off with, the bracelet sells for $1,500. It's a lie. The bracelet sells for $500. But I know it will get the old biddy's goat, and I wasn't hired to be splattered with rudeness. I'm about to walk off, seeking a more companionable table, when the British woman hisses, snotty bitch. I stop. In my days of table modeling, I've had women ask me if I'm wearing a bra. I've had old ladies slap my stomach with the back of their hand. Look at that flat stomach. I've had women try to buy my shoes. Not for sale. My earrings. Not for sale. And my figure. Does your figure come with it? Also, not for sale. I've had many unexpected experiences. While you're showing the clothes, the customers are showing you themselves. But I have never let myself be cursed at, and I don't intend to start. I do a half turn on my pumps, calf brown, to soften the pink tweed, and politely inquire of the woman, what did you say? She grins at her table companions. I called her a snotty bitch, didn't I, girls? Pretty good show, what? And she guffaws. The jowls under her chin wobble. I can feel Olivia sluicing near, slinking over like a salamander edging for the pool drain. She's trying to insert herself into whatever's happening. She expects me to give way and let her work the table. She would be mistaken. Allow me to show you this bracelet again, madam, I say, as I shoot Olivia a go-to-hell look. She swivels her snaky neck, looking for someone to complain to, but Josie is nowhere to be seen. I extend my wrist to the British bitch. Take a good look. Isn't it beautiful? The most amazing thing about this bracelet is a woman like yourself, built like a German tank, and no more fashion sense than a warthog on parade, and yet the bracelet will be attractive on your wrist. Becca! Olivia is gone, replaced by Josie. I smile sweet as pie. I was showing this dear woman this lovely bracelet. I lock my eyes with the British bitch. But if you can't afford it, I shrug. Why, you! The woman is wrestling out of her chair, practically tumbling from her seat, her dumpy legs tangling in on themselves. One of her table companions cautions, Midge! But she kicks free from the chair, which is when I realize she's wearing colored hose. Navy opaque hose, in Memphis, in May. I am so mesmerized by this stunningly inappropriate choice of legwear, I miss it when she lunges. Her nails scrape down my forearm, stinging like the dickens, but no blood, thank God, no blood on the jacket. Just long, red welts throbbing up my arm. Can't afford! She paws at my arm, her hands coarse as a scrub woman's. Can't afford! She is going for the bracelet. She has it in her grasp. I am being mugged. I glance to Josie for help, but she's paralyzed with shock. The woman yanks, and I respond with a shove, pushing her shoulder with the heel of my hand. She torques, but stays clasped onto the bracelet, her breath coming in clumpy fits and spurts, her horny nails trying to pry open the delicate, filigreed clasp. Then she does something that makes it feel like a wasp is stinging my wrist, which makes me yelp and jerk my arm, and all of a sudden pearls are clattering all over the floor, pinging under the chairs, rolling on the tabletop, casting themselves before all these swine. George quits playing. The room goes deadly quiet. Oh, my. The woman covers her mouth with the back of her hand. She glances up at me, her eyes jumping like a gigged frog. I'm standing lopsided. I've stepped out of one of my pumps. My chignon has come untwirled. My camisole untucked from my waistband. I catch a ragged breath, and the remnant of the bracelet slides from my wrist, rolls onto and across the floor. Becca! Josie suddenly comes alive, centering on me as her target. I whirl around. She's mad as hell at me. Frantic for help, I scan the room, but even George has ducked his head. Then I catch the eye of the mousy woman at the table next door. Her face is frozen, mortified, which brings home to me the extent of this disaster, which makes me break out into a sweat. Popping and flopping my back, flaring my underarms, weeping, everything bursts forth like a broken spraying garden hose. I jerk off the jacket and throw it over the back of the woman's chair. Snatching the hem of my camisole, I free it from my waistband. I fan air onto my skin. My back is on fire. My pits are sticky. I am ruining this $1,000 suit. Olivia has slunk over to our table. She is smirking. I cannot do anything about it. I must save the clothes. Oblivious, the British woman slumps into her chair. I showed her. What, girls? Almost unconsciously, she lifts the jacket from the back of the chair where I've tossed it. Carefully, professionally, she folds it, following the cut of the fabric, like a long-time saleswoman folding from habit, or a maid accustomed to picking strewn clothes off the floor and neatly folding them back into place. When she raises her eyes, her face is dead white. And I realize she can't afford it, not any of it, not the Armani suit or the $1,000 jacket, not the pearl bracelet, probably not even the chicken salad lunch. She's gotten lost, somewhere in between the Graceland tour with its flip-flop tourists and the daiquiris of Beale Street. She's gotten lost and wandered into a fashion show. I lift the jacket from her hands and slip my arms through the sleeves, flipping my hair from the collar. I figure we're about even here, and turn to go. Josie stops me. She lifts a handful of pearls. She is shaking like a leaf. This is ruined, Becca. Ruined. Someone has to pay for this. Implying I am the one who ruined it, even though she saw the entire thing. Telling me as clearly as she can, I am the one who has to pay for it. I glance at the British woman who narrows her eyes. So much for being even. She's right, of course, because she is the customer. She is the patron. She is the one we are whining and dining and fawning over. I am the employee. I am responsible. Olivia grins, then swallows it like a bug when I shoot her a look. It won't matter. Whatever happens, my relationship with Glenglade is over. I have ruined it, this hour of unreality Glenglade worked so hard to create for these women. Exquisite food, lovely music, beautiful clothes, the illusion of a Glenglade kind of time that allows the women to believe just for a moment all of life can be this way if only they can run from this luncheon to Glenglade Shopping Center and buy some clothes. They can make this happiness last forever, and I, the primary creator of the illusion, have stomped all over it. Josie, no doubt, will stop calling me for jobs. No one will tell me when her baby is born. When I run into her on the street, she'll smile brightly and ask how I've been. I will say, fine, never been better. Then I'll hobble away, my feet crippled by too many trunk shows. The clasp broke. I nod at Josie to give me the pieces. I'll take care of it with the store, meaning I will have worked all week for nothing. I am bending to pick up the pieces from the floor when I hear someone behind me say, I'll take it. I glance over my shoulder. It's the mousy woman from the next table. I stop my gathering and rise. You'll take what? I'll take it, she repeats as her husband pops off a short curse. Shoving back from the table, he stomps out of the room. The mousy woman smiles, a tucked, hidden-away smile, as if it's been a long time coming. I lied, I confess. The bracelet isn't $1,500. It's $500, plus tax. It's costume. The pearls are fake. I study the broken piece in my hand. You see, she pretty much tore the clasp to shit. I want the suit, the jacket, camisole, and the skirt. She's pointing to each piece of clothing I have on, and the bracelet.
The bracelet's broken, Olivia squeaks. She points to the table. She broke it.
The British woman looks away, busy with her fork, while Josie stands open-mouthed, agog. The mousy woman darts a look at the pearls strewn all over the floor, but holds her ground. For the next 2 weeks, every time I'm around Josie, she will tell anyone willing to listen, a broken bracelet. Becca sold a broken bracelet. Becca can sell anything. Which isn't true. The mousy woman, for reasons of her own, saved my butt. Who knows why someone chooses to help a stranger? Maybe she was thanking me for showing her the clothes, asshole husband or not. Maybe she saw exactly what happened and wanted to right a wrong. Or maybe she just liked the suit. And after all, the bracelet did show well with it. Whatever. From now on, when someone sniffs and says, well, it looks good on you. Or when a woman lifts her fork with a curt, thank you, letting me know I've been dismissed. Or when some lady stares me down, flicking her eyes over my outfit, then returns to eating without a word. Whenever that happens, from now on, I will keep my mouth shut. Because you're not going to get love from a stranger very often. So you shouldn't snip at the customers, even the truly ugly customers. My job is to do my job, which in my case is fairly easy, which is to show the clothes. I tighten my jacket around my shoulders. I lift my chin, putting it on a shelf. If you will excuse me, I tell anyone still listening, I must return to work. I need to show the clothes. Thanks for listening. To contribute to WKNO 91.1 NPR for the Mid-South, please follow the link at can'tdonothingwithlove.wordpress.com or visit wknofm.org, or donate to your own regional NPR affiliate for its free public radio act of kindness. Message me on Facebook at Can't Do Nothing With Love. Our music, The Lights of Home, was written and sung by Mr. Rob Pate. Rock on, Rob.
Oh, he's the light of home. Thank you. Thank you very much.